Well, ladies, today we're going to hear God's calling on mom's life. And we're going to do that just through a simple conversation and interview. It's a story that hasn't been told a whole lot over the years, but it's all about a woman who loves the Lord with all of her heart and was completely and is completely dedicated to Him and serving Him no matter what the circumstances might be. So, Mom, you are an artist, and because of that reason, you like to refer to life as a canvas, and God as the master artist who paints the perfect portrait on our canvas of life for each of us according to His will. Today, we're going to share those details of your portrait with the ladies, and I know you have one heart's desire that you want them to just hear resounding through our conversation today. So could you share that theme, please?
Yes. I don't want you to leave this room thinking about Norma Whitcomb. I want you to think about how Jesus Christ, God the Father, has worked in this life to make me a vessel for His honor and for His glory. And He has a verse that I have used a lot in my life. It's the thought that all God can is totally sufficient for our lives, and His grace, it's by His grace that we live and move and have our being, and His sufficiency is always right there for our needs. That's what I want you to go home with. Don't think about how hard it is, but think about, focus on the Lord Jesus Christ. And in any situation, His grace is sufficient.
Well, let's begin with a little background of your childhood. You grew up in what you call a little hamlet,
yes,
in upstate New York, called New Salem. Right along the Hudson River, you lived with your parents and your brother. You've told me that your mom was a great cook and seamstress. And tell us, what did your father do for a living?
He was one of these people who would be called a jack of all trades. He could do anything, and he did it very well. He had a good reputation, so that when anybody wanted anything done, they would call my father. And it wasn't always just mediocre things. He was a musician. He gave music lessons. He was a photographer. He was in the field, and he also did, what did we call that? He preached on fill-ins, taught Sunday school. So he was a very well-rounded man who loved the Lord. And my mother was a very well-rounded woman who loved the Lord. And so I was reared in a home where there was great examples set before to me. So I love the Lord too.
So that was God painting bright brushstrokes on your canvas,
yes,
very early in life, mm-hmm, by allowing you to be reared in a loving and kind home. Do you have just one fond childhood memory that you can share with us today?
They were small memories because my mother was ill at my early age, died the day before my 16th birthday after a long illness in bed. But I had some sweet memories for before that. We would go nutting on my grandfather's farm, eat lunch by a little stream, go up to the Catskill Mountains to see my parents' families and play with my cousins and things of that sort. But the greatest memory that I have is spending Sunday afternoons in our home because we were a musical family, and we played in all the old-fashioned tent meetings, weeks, months, a month at a time in churches for these special evangelistic meetings they'd have. So on Sunday afternoon, we sat in the living room with our instruments, and for about 2 hours, we would just practice and play, and just the four of us, my father, as you mentioned him, and had a wonderful time. That is one of my most beautiful family memories that I have.
What a wonderful way to worship all together.
Oh, we had a wonderful time. We played hymns, yeah. Every time.
Let's talk about your mother for a moment. You were her caregiver,
yes.
From an early age.
Yes.
How did her illness affect your household?
Well, being bedridden for at least 2.5 years before she died, I became chief cook and bottle washer at the age of 13. My father bought and installed, because that was one of his expertise, an electric stove. And we were the first ones in the community to have one. And I, even at that age, I learned how to can peaches in the new electric stove in oven. So I have, what was your question, Kim?
How did your mom's illness affect the household?
Well, that was how it affected me. And that was mostly the way it was. I also, well, I was very industrious, because that was the example I had set before me. So while I was doing that, I was also a paper deliverer. Every night, taking papers around the little community on my bicycle. That affected me, but I had to work that into family experiences.
What's amazing, what the Lord will permit in our lives that we may not understand why at that time, but later on we'll use that to bear fruit later
yes.
on. And
yes.
He certainly used that
mm-hmm.
as you were a caregiver at other times. Okay, so you have graduated from high school now, and you have a dream of going to college.
Yes.
Before you could get there, though, you had to work for 4 years. So you were a chambermaid and cook for 2 years. And then you needed to earn more money, so you became a Rosie the Riveter.
That's right.
In support of the war effort. I would have liked to have seen you working in that factory. I can't quite picture that.
Well, I was riveting. I was soldering.
Okay. Okay.
Detonators.
So the war ends in 1945, and your employer gives you a decision. You need to make a decision.
That's right.
And tell us a little bit about what was going on.
Oh, it came to the end of the war, and they had to lay off a lot of riveters. And so I had the choice of either staying, I was told I could stay, or they would give me a release with 2 weeks' pay. I said, I'll take the 2 weeks' pay. And, no, excuse me. I said I would stay and planned on that. But I had wanted to go to college so badly, but you can see that there was no way I ever earned enough money for that. And my parents were not poor, but because of my mother's illness, a lot of the money had to go for her care. So after I said that, the Lord, in His mercy and His grace, made it possible that in 1 week, my whole life changed, and I was able to go to college. It's an experience to have things like that happen in your life, isn't it? You've all had them. I'm not the only one. And you just want to tell everybody about God's goodness all over again. So I had to go down to this little factory. No, it wasn't little. It was huge. Factory and say, I'm going to go. I'm leaving. Oh, you're leaving. I thought you couldn't go do anything else. I just had to make a little testimony, signed out, and within 1 week, I was in college. God's grace, His sufficiency. You know, I have a verse that's been my life verse, and it's like this. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Philippians 4:13. And it's been that way my whole life. It's not I doing these things. It's God just working, gives us the desire of our hearts. We have a desire that's almost impossible. But He works it out so unexpectedly, so quickly, that you just have to stand back with your heart full of praise and blinking your eyes.
So off to college you go at Houghton College in New York.
Yes.
And you were there for 4 years.
Yes.
And what was your course of study?
I did Christian education. I wanted at a very early age to be a missionary. So all my life there was something there I was preparing for, because I was going to be a missionary. So I took college courses that would prepare me for that. I could teach on the mission field, I hoped, and just be ready in that respect. And so that was it. And I had three minors, which prepared me also for good things on the mission field.
Mm-hmm. During those 4 years, the Lord called you home because your father had passed away.
That's right. I want to back up a moment. Now, what did I want to say? I had to work my way through college. I had to pay my whole way through college. That's what I did. Except for one, and this is God's, I'm saying this for God's glory again. He provides. Except for one $50 anonymous gift. But God helped me. He takes care of sparrows, and I said, "You'll take care of me, God." He provides daily bread, and He would provide for my education. And He did. I did it in 4 years. God was gracious. He gets all the glory.
So you went home for your father's funeral and then went back to college again. You had some loss in your family at a pretty young age. Do you recall ever struggling just really knowing that God was good as you are now a young woman alone seemingly in the world?
No. I just knew God was good and I wasn't struggling with it. I accepted it and I believed it and I lived on that premise.
Okay.
I'm no angel. I know that. It's all of God. Please, I'm not trying to put myself. I have to just say God did it.
You just applied what you had. You love the Lord. You were in His Word. You believed His Word. You applied His Word, and you lived it.
Yeah.
So that's what you've done for so many years. Okay, so your senior year at Houghton, a young man by the name of Robert Pritchett was in your missions club.
Yes.
And he kind of caught your eye. Tell us how you were introduced, and eventually, how did he propose to you?
Well, there wasn't much of an introduction at all, because I saw him. We went to the same club, mission club. I saw him in the hallway, but I didn't go to college to get a husband. I went to college to get an education so I could go to the mission field. That was my whole purpose. But we did have an occasion where we went out two times, kind of very casual. I graduated, and we said goodbye. He was there, And we said goodbye at my graduation. And he was a war vet, so he was a year after me. And that was the end of it. Over. Done.
Well, how did you get reunited then?
Pardon?
How did you get reunited then?
Well, after I finished college, I began to realize I have no parents. I have no other brothers or sisters. Well, I had a brother, but I was getting lonely. Life is changing. College, you're busy. Now I talk about the one rooms. I took a job at a little one-room schoolhouse with six children, and that wasn't much of a life, you know? When the day was over, what do you do? And so I started praying, Lord, I don't know a single person in the whole wide world whom I would even think of going out with. There's no young men in my church that I wanted. There were no people in this little hamlet that I would be interested in. Now, I thought that that sounded like rather a futile prayer, but there are no futile prayers. And I left it there. There was this man, this young man, whom I had been out with twice. He was now in his senior year. He was getting what you call senior panic because he had dated quite a bit, but he hadn't found the right one for his life, to be his mate for life, and to go to a mission field with either. So he started praying, and the Lord brought my name to his attention. And so we started a correspondence. And you can imagine what happened. We got married.
You got married very quickly. He was invited to your home for Easter, which was April the 9th, 1950. And 2.5 months later, you were married and off to serve the Lord side by side together, with the goal of focusing on missions.
Yeah. We went away because he went to seminary in Dallas.
Yes. So you honeymooned from New York to Texas.
Yeah.
To get him to Dallas for seminary.
Yes.
Where you'd spend the next 4 years.
Yes.
And, how did you help support your hubby getting him through seminary?
Oh, well, at the end of 4 years, we both had, degrees. He had his bachelor degree from seminary. And I had a degree also. It's called PhD degree. Put hubby through. I worked at the seminary for the first year in the business office to finish up some courses that I had to have in order to be a teacher in an elementary school. And then I taught for the 3 years.
Okay. So the senior year is when the Lord blessed you with little Dan.
Yes.
But having a baby didn't seem to slow you down. As you and Robert both were taking classes in linguistics and moving forward toward that goal of becoming missionaries.
Yes.
And so soon after graduation, the three of you were accepted to Wycliffe. Yeah. And then eventually you were sent to jungle school in New Mexico.
Yes, they called it boot camp.
Boot camp, yes.
And it really was.
Yes. So with baby Dan in tow, you rode on an airplane and then a burro and then another small little plane that dropped you off in your survival location. No shelter. No food, no running water, no air conditioning, no restroom. And it was
true.
Up to you and Robert to build your hut, to hunt for monkey for food, to cut vines to get water, and you slept in hammocks that were covered with mosquito nets.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever question whether being a missionary was really for you?
I never questioned it, but I had a few times when it was, you know, tearful and trying to put it together. Yes, but it worked out okay. I remember the first night we arrived to our destination where we were to sleep, or to stay, we had to put our jungle hammocks up to sleep in that night. The next day you start building your hut. And if it rained, you didn't get wet. Mosquitoes were terrible, but you were inside of this jungle hammock. My husband happened to tip his upside down, and I had to sleep that first night with my baby in my arms in the jungle hammock. Mm-hmm. And the very first night it had rained. We had no wood to use to make a fire to cook our supper. That's one time I cried. You can't believe what I cried over. I had taken my beautiful pressure cooker with me. And I'm sitting on a log holding my baby, my husband trying to get a flame under this pressure cooker, finally got some smoke and smoked it all up, and I finally cried.
Okay, real quick, we all have to know, did you like monkey?
You know what? We went out one time to get monkey, and I thought I was going to have to eat it. And another group went out, and they came home with a little baby deer. So we didn't have to eat the monkey that we sometimes went out to get.
Oh, good. Okay.
There were other ways that God supplied.
All right, so after much prayer, you and Robert were led away from Jungle Missions, and you were then accepted by the China Inland Mission.
Yes.
So your focus changed a little bit there.
Yes.
Eventually you were
all
sent...
All of that, and we didn't use it.
Yeah. Well, if you ever need to work on survival, you'll know what to do. You can teach us. Okay, so eventually you were sent to England and then Singapore through the China Inland Mission. And all that time, you didn't know this, but they were observing you and evaluating you so that they could figure out where you would best fit into their missions. And so you were given your first assignment, and they told you you were going to the Philippines. Do you remember how you and Robert felt when you heard that?
Yes, we were very happy because before Robert and I ever knew each other, he felt that he wanted to go to Japan as a missionary, and his second choice was the Philippines. And I wanted to go to South America, and my second choice was the Philippines. You see, when we left the States, we did not know what field we were going to be assigned to until they observed us and fit us into a niche.
Okay. So there was a little bit of a delay before you were sent to the Philippines.
Oh, yes.
And during that time, you became pregnant and expecting your second son.
Yeah.
But it brought another opportunity for you as a couple to keep your head and your heart bowed before the Lord to know His will. Can you explain the situation?
Yes, because the China Inland Mission had a policy that you could only go to the field with one child. But they had extended the time we were to leave the States to go to the mission field. And guess what happened? Mm-hmm. I became pregnant. So here we are packing suitcases and barrels and things like that. And they didn't have to be very big barrels or suitcases because we could only take 250 pounds. Now, that's different than today, isn't it? But that was the way it was. But anyway, I'm packing, and we don't know if we're even going because the mission had to take time to make a decision whether we were still eligible.
Okay. So you did go to language school, and you learned to speak Tagalog.
Yes.
And you can still speak that some today.
It's fun.
I've heard you in restaurants every now and then when you have a waitress from the Philippines. So you arrived in the Philippines. What was your first job that you had to do there?
What was
your first job at the Philippines?
Oh, we were down in a barrio, mm-hmm. And there had been another missionary couple there, an older couple for some years, planting the seed, but there had been no salvation experiences for anybody. But when we got there as helpers, the Lord just opened it up, and there we started having meetings on the seashore, on the sand of the seashores, and some people were saved at that time, and it started then that we had a little group, a church, and that's what we did for our first 5 years on the mission field, taught and got established, learned more of the language, and prepared to stay there forever until the Lord called us home, or we got too old and they sent us home.
So after those first 5 years, they sent you to another part of the Philippines, though.
Yes.
And your job and focus kind of changed a bit.
Quite a bit.
And you really enjoyed that part of ministry.
Exactly. Then we were able to do what we wanted to do more than anything else. We were both very involved in education, and we wanted to be teachers on the mission field. Of course, I'd already been a teacher. And so that opened up to us. And the next point was that when we went back from our first furlough, we were assigned to a Bible institute and seminary, and that's where we spent our next 6 years. And we were just so happy. I mean, we walked across the campus. We could look out of our door. I mean, we were in our house and could see the students walking across the campus, talking about them, planning our next opportunities to minister to them in some way besides just classroom. And we had the most wonderful experience because we were teaching young people to do a job, and it extended us. Every young person we taught was us out there doing the same thing, you could see. Mm-hmm. So the Lord was gracious and gave us the very depth of our heart's desire.
Mm-hmm. What was the most difficult experience on the mission field?
Oh, well, we had two children. Mm-hmm. And they were coming of age to go to school. And our mission had another policy. We loved the mission. We had no problems with it, but they had policies. It's an old mission. You know what it's like, some of you. When your children became age to go to school, they were sent away to the mission school. And that meant it was so far away that they didn't live home. They lived in the school. Our older son, 6 years old, six and a half, went away to school. 3 months not seeing my son. That was tearful too. As the next son, at 5 and a half, I didn't see, I couldn't, wrap his birthday presents, couldn't make a birthday cake, I couldn't tuck them in bed at night, and on it goes. They'd come home for 1 month, 3 months away, 1 month home, around the calendar. When they'd leave, oh, we had such a good time, but I still had to do my teaching. I was a teacher at the school. I still had my responsibilities, but we worked in a lot of nice little things along the way. But when it came time for them to leave, this little trunk that we had taken with us became their toy trunk and the clothes that they would wear when they came home. I had to pack that trunk, and it was as though I had put my little boys in a coffin. And I cried like, you can imagine. And I want to read to you, something to you here. Because of that time, God gave me this song that I would try to sing while I was crying, but the words were there anyhow. And I'm only going to read one verse and a chorus, but just think when you are going through trial yourselves, think of this wonderful verse as a song. It's in the hymnal here at our church, page 149. He giveth more grace when our burdens grow greater. He sendeth more strength as our labors increase. To added affliction, he addeth his mercy. To multiplied trials is multiplied peace. His love has no limit. His grace has no measure. Think of it, women, when we're going through it, hard times. His power has no boundary known unto men. For out of his infinite riches in Jesus, he giveth and giveth and giveth again. You know, we forget, that's peace. Isn't that peace? And I have, if I can find it in a hurry here, I came across a beautiful definition of peace as a Christian. Peace is God's gift of unruffled quietness. Peace is a gift of God's unruffled quietness. Can you feel that? Can you feel it? Which defies the crushing circumstances of life. Don't we have a lot to praise God for?
Okay, it's through those conflicts and trials that the Lord really grows his character in us, doesn't he? Okay, so we're going to have to fast forward here. You and Robert are sent back to the U.S. To further your education for the seminary there in the Philippines. And through much prayer and seeking God's guidance, you end up in Winona Lake with your husband attending Grace Seminary.
Yes.
And you were just there a short time, and all of a sudden the Lord has a life-changing, altering brushstroke that he puts across your canvas. Can you quickly tell us what happened that night when you got the knock on the door?
Yes, my husband was in seminary We were both getting higher degrees to go back to the field so that the school could be accredited. And he went out the seminary to jog, as he always did, out of the house to jog in the night, in the evening. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was a bad one.
You're good.
Anyway, and he went out, as he said, I'll be back in 15 minutes, which was the normal. He had tucked the boys in bed and everything. And this is in the middle of the night because he was a very studious student. And all of a sudden, when he left, I flopped on the bed and fell asleep. About 2 hours later, people came to my door, 4 people, to tell me, and then came in the house to tell me that my husband had died, had fallen, had had a heart attack, and was with the Lord. That crashed our plans, naturally. We were just home to study, go back, and stay where we like to be.
What was your response to them when they said that to you?
I can't believe that this was my response, but it was all of the Lord. Because I told you before, I'm no saint. I said, God does all things well. That's what he assured me at that very moment, that I needed to be lifted up.
So here you were at the age of 44, a widow, mm-hmm. and 2 sons,
yes.
11 and 13.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Someone had to tell the boys that their daddy is now with Jesus. And you were the one who tell them that next morning.
When it was time for them to get up, I went to their room and I said, Daddy said he'd be in to get you, to wake you up this morning. But he won't be in today. He's in heaven with Jesus. There were tears, of course. But there was that peace, again, that we just talked about in that room.
How did you handle your grief during those next few months and years?
I was so busy trying to keep everything going, and I had to pack, and I had to go from one side of it, from
Winona Lake.
Yes, from Winona Lake back to Kansas, and because that's where my husband's family lived, and not to be with them, but my boys needed some help. They needed some real close companionship, mm-hmm. and their cousins were there. Mm-hmm. And, oh, there was another reason, too. I had started my master's degree, and I started it in the summers over in Kansas, so I had to go back and complete my master's degree after that. So there were reasons to move ahead.
Okay. So while you were there, you finished your master's degree, and you were also given the opportunity to start an art department at a local high school. And so you were very busy handling those two things, raising the boys, plus taking care of your home.
I didn't have time to grieve. I did grieve a lot. Nights were hard. I worked hard during the day, but at night it was different. And I would read a whole book of the Bible. I'd go over it and I'd pour out my heart before the Lord. I had to get up the next morning and go and teach at a Christian high school. And it was full. It was full. But God was with me every step of the way, and I knew it. I knew it. I wouldn't dismiss that from anybody, my mind for a moment. And that's where he always is. He's with us all the way, all the time.
You've always been a woman of the word, and you were very disciplined, and you had a good foundation to stand on during that trial. Mm-hmm. And you were in the word, and the word was in you,
that's right.
You like to say.
That's how it happened.
And that's so important that we are in his word, learning it. So when those times come, we can look to his promises and assurances. Okay, so summer is there. The boys go off to Colorado to work on a ranch, and you go back to Winona Lake to work at a camp as a counselor.
Yes.
You get there. The camp has been canceled. They didn't tell you, but the Lord had another plan in mind. So, well, quickly, we only have about 5 minutes left. So, you can explain. Dr. Whitcomb calls you, and he has something he wants to share with you. What was that?
See, I was going back to Winona Lake to be in a counselor in this camp, but God had other plans. And Dr. Whitcomb heard that I was in Winona Lake, and he called me and said that he wondered if I would go for on a jaunt with him. I didn't know how to dress. I had no idea. But I said yes. He came and got me in the car. We went down the highway, and he said, I want to talk to you about something. And I thought, since his wife had, he was one of the four people who stood in my home that night and told me that the Lord had taken my husband. Now, in the meantime, his wife had died. And I thought, we have something in common, and we're just going to have a chat. The chat wasn't what I expected. As we drove down, he said to me, we'd had a conversation, I don't remember, I don't know all that, but he said to me, you know, before Sini, and that was his wife's name, went to be with the Lord, she said, Norma, that she would like you to be the mother of our four children.
In your reply?
Well, I didn't expect that. I wasn't looking for a husband. I was going back to the mission field. But I got a mission field right in our house. I don't know what we talked about, but anyhow, it came out that before that talk was over, he had really proposed to me, and I said yes.
Now, this is amazing to me because you had told me that you said yes, you would try for Sini.
Yes, I said yes, I'll try to be the mother of your four children. So, I didn't go back across the seas, but I had a mission field right in our home. Six, my two, his four, who were hurting tremendously. And I said, that's my mission field. And you know what? It was my mission field. Here, a few years ago, we had a family reunion, and we came to this church, sat down in the pews. It took two long pews. That's how we'd grown. That was my mission field, because nearly every single one, well, I guess every single one, claims salvation. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what God will do. He did it. It's all of him. His grace is sufficient for every need. Don't remember me. Remember God's grace in your own life. When you need it, it's there. He's always there.
So we're brushing through quite a few details we don't have time to share. We wanted to talk a little bit about blending families because that is a huge topic these days. But just in conclusion, Mom and Dad started Whitcomb Ministries. Mom is still involved in ministry by writing blogs on that website. So you feel free to get on our website and you can read her blogs. And you're reaching out to your grandchildren and really trying to be involved with them and mentoring other women as well.
Yeah.
I do have to say one thing in conclusion here. I know you're not going to want me to say this, but I know you want to hide behind the cross today. Sorry. But you have been the backbone behind the ministry, behind the family, just holding life together. And allowing others to successfully fulfill the calling in their life, especially for Dad. And it just doesn't quite seem right not to make that known. And you are an amazing woman. God has gifted you with many talents.
Amazing God.
Yes.
Amazing God.
Yes. But you cooperated with him. And he has created a beautiful masterpiece on your campus. So thank you, Mom, for just your example. And thank you for just responding to God's brushstrokes on your canvas in a way that brought him honor and glory.
Amen.